now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astral robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And babes.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain! Back to the House of Pain!
Hello everyone and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast. From classic to cults and all the cheese in between, the movies are B, but your entertainment is grade A. And I am your host, Jason Giaconetti. I'm once again joined by my dad, Al Giaconetti.
Hey, Jay. Hey, we're doing House of Frankenstein today. You know that's five times more terrifying and five times more thrilling.
Yes, it's our All Hallows Eve episode special, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll get to it right after this.
I'm going to repay you for betraying me. I'm going to give that brain of yours a new home in the skull of the Frankenstein monster.
The jugular vein is severed, not cut, the thorn apart as though by powerful teeth.
A werewolf. Last night I killed a man.
I didn't know what you were doing.
But I did. I wanted to kill.
I think they're after Dracula.
House of Frankenstein. Now, we have some release dates here. It was released in New York City December 15th, 1944, in L.A. on December 22nd, 1944, but nationally, February 16th, 1945. Though, what I'm thinking here is there were special releases for the Christmas season, kind of to get people to go in and see a movie, especially since kids were on winter break.
And it's also, towards the end of World War II.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, again, but it's, what do you call it? They were trying to get people back to the movie, trying to get people out doing things. All right, so running time of 71 minutes. The story, you had that, who wrote the writer and stuff?
Well, the story was written by Kurt Siodmak, and the original title of this movie was called The Devil's Brood, and the screenplay was adapted by Edward Lowe, based on Siodmak's stories. And he wrote many stories that were later used for films.
Yeah, well, the originally calling this Devil's Brood, that's actually what they were going to call this movie originally. And it was actually given a budget of $354,000, which is kind of generous by the Universal standards, especially for a 30-day shoot. Of that money, Boris Karloff was paid $20,000, which is, again, 1944 dollars. Lon Chaney received a flat $10,000. for his third appearance as the werewolf. John Carradine and J. Carroll Nash received 7,000 each. Lionel Atwell, 1,750. George Zucko, 1,500. And Glenn Strange, who laid around most of the movie, $500. So, just kind of, I thought that was funny. I wanted to make sure I shared that with you guys. So, when we're talking about House of Frankenstein, and we'll get into the plot in a second. House of Frankenstein is part of the series of Universals. And House of Frankenstein is one of those that was, it came after Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. It's definitely in the second set of the Universal movies. And it came after Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, which, again, it was a classic, and it was essentially the sequel to The Wolfman. And this became part of what they kind of were kind of cash in on what was happening when they had released everything to the television wasn't, is still, you know, becoming television. But Dracula, Frankenstein, those things, those were not readily available, so they knew, but people knew about them. Famous Monsters of Filmland was kind of in its infancy, not even really yet.
It's just, not even.
No, it wasn't called that yet. It was before Ackerman really brought that there, but it kind of, people, kids were kind of starting to get back into this, but they were really trying to capture the people who remembered those kind of things going forward. So, all right, here we go. So, it's some years after the Frankenstein monster and the Wolfman met in the demise of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. But it opens with Dr. Neiman, who's Boris Karloff, and a hunchback assistant, Daniel. They're currently in jail. And during a lightning storm, the worst jail, like, it falls apart. Like, the whole, what it looked like is somebody backed a truck into the building and it just all crumpled to the ground.
I mean, it's called Neustadt Prison.
Yeah, yeah.
And it toppled, the prison was put together with chewing gum and spit. And
yeah.
That's, but when you see the lead into the guard trying to give Neiman his meal, it looks like it's a huge stone edifice, and just lightning. This had to be an earthquake, because there's no way this thing is just going to topple.
But they just show lightning strike.
Right.
A lightning strikes the building, and it explodes everything. So anyway, they escape. So and they escape. They manage to help Dr. Lampy, traveling horror show, right?
Yeah, Dr. Lampini.
Dr. Lampini. Sorry. Now that's George Zucco.
Right.
Right. And people know George Zucco from the Mummy movies.
Mummies. Yeah.
Yeah. So they help him get the wagon out of the mud, and they keep going. And then they wind up killing him. Right. So what happens? They just kill him, and Boris Karloff takes over as Lampini. Right.
Right.
So their first stop is Regalsburg, which is where he wanted to go. And when they're in Regalsburg, part of what Lampini has in his traveling horror convention is supposedly Dracula's coffin with Dracula's dirt, with Dracula's skeleton with a stake in the heart. Well, what's the first thing they do? They get there, he pulls the stake out of his heart.
Well, before we get to that, the Karloff is looking for revenge against the three main guys who put him in jail. And going to Riegelman the Burgermeister is his name is Husmann. And he's one of the key guys who put the Boris in jail, and that is played by a guy by the name of Sig Ruman, who was the sergeant in Stalag 17. And I'll tell you now, the Stalag 17 was 13 years later. This guy didn't age a day compared to the part he plays here. But and Lionel Atwell plays the part of the inspector in Riegelman. And again, these are two of the key players in the story.
Yeah, well, they also are, what do you call it, too? Those are actors, especially Lionel Atwell. He's a Universal player. Like, he's a guy under contract. They just kind of, you know, he's in. He plays basically the same role.
Yeah, and well, in just Son of Frankenstein.
Son of Frankenstein.
He's the one that has his arm ripped off.
Right, which is what they make fun of in Young Frankenstein, you know, kind of thing. But again, Lionel Atwell plays a lot of those. Yeah. I didn't see that. So the whole point is that, But anyway, so he pulls the stake out of Dracula's heart, and it's John Carradine playing Jackra. And I've always felt John Carradine is probably the worst Dracula maybe ever. Not a big fan of his as Dracula. I don't like his look. I don't like the way... Again, it's nothing against the man personally, but him as Dracula just was never sold on that.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be Bela Lugosi, and this is actually a funny story. So it's supposed to be Bela Lugosi. So they're kind of filming the movie around Boris Karloff being in the Broadway production of Arsenic and Old Lace. And they had to wait for Karloff to become available because Karloff's the big name they're going to get here. So they put Karloff in, but as soon as that happened, Lugosi took his part in the play, and that's why he's out. Because otherwise we'd have Bela Lugosi. Now, the problem is Bela Lugosi, 1945, he's kind of not looking good at this point. I mean, he did Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and there it wasn't anything...
Yeah, he played Frankenstein.
But not for most of it. He's only on screen... Frankenstein Monster's only on screen for like 8 minutes, and of that 8 minutes, he's only it for like three.
Yeah,
it's a stuntman. So,
the thing with Carradine having the stake taken out and becomes Dracula again, is that Husman sees Karloff, Niemann, in person, and doesn't recognize him right away. But then, as the plot goes on, and then the next couple of scenes later, he starts to have doubts about Lampini, because he had chased Lampini's brother out of the...
He chased Lampini out, and Karloff is now saying, I'm Lampini's brother. And he's looking at him like basically without saying, he goes, you don't look like him, kind of thing.
But he had his doubts.
Yeah. Well, remember, the thing is, too, is that supposedly Karloff has been in jail, or Niemann's been in jail 15 years, at least at that point, right? So, he escapes. He's got the big beard and everything, and they trim that. He cleans up nice, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it's 15 years ago when they come. Anyway, so now Carradine's back, and he's Dracula. And what Niemann says to him is, I will serve you if you do what I want you to do. And basically, he wants Dracula to go do his Dracula-y things and take care of the people who have wronged him.
Yeah, that's a little far-fetched. I mean, Dracula's not about to kowtow, even though once he's got the stake out of his heart, Dracula can do just about anything he wants.
But I think, though, too, this is one of the reasons why this works. Anybody who's ever heard me talk about Dracula knows that, to me, Dracula's always going to be Christopher Lee, and Bela Lugosi's fine, but I always like Christopher Lee better. Lugosi as Dracula here, you just wouldn't buy Boris Karloff, whether he's in whatever universal monster he is, taking the stake out and Lugosi's Dracula saying, yes, I will help you.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't do it. But to me, Carradine has always kind of been the milquetoast Dracula. Like George Hamilton, I thought, was more effective as Dracula when he was the suntan Dracula.
I mean, Carradine has he's got the right...
Technically, according to the book, he's correct. He's got the mustache. And but he just doesn't... Lugosi's a little tiny guy, but he was able to bring that creep factor there. Carradine looks like, someone's like uncle who's showing up at the family reunion a little late. At least he's got on pants.
Well, Carradine, in the years before, in the 30s, he used to play a lot of Western roles.
Yes.
Where he was... one of the gang. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but Carradine is actually a descendant of an actual saint, San Pedro Carradagan, the patron saint of Barcelona.
Okay.
And it was just a little tidbit.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
I mean, we're full of this information for you folks.
Yeah, full of it. So he disguises himself as Baron Latos.
Latos, right.
Now, there is a book that it was a screenplay. It's called The Wolfman versus Dracula, or Wolfman, whatever. It was clearly written. I don't remember who wrote it, but it was clearly written to be Lon Chaney as the Wolfman, trying to find a way to die, which is his entire motive ever. And he runs into Dracula, and that Dracula, I think, might have been under the same name. I might be wrong, but I thought he was hiding as a baron. And he's trying to seduce the young girl, and it's a screenplay. It's out there. It's on Amazon. You can go find it. Anyway, so he kills the Burgermeister, right?
Husman, right?
He gives the ring to the granddaughter, the wife of the grandson, kind of thing, right?
It's
whatever.
No, it's she's the granddaughter.
No, I thought. Oh, doesn't matter. She gets the ring.
Yeah.
She's now like, the ring changes size. It's just weird. But this just get her out of the picture. He breaks in and he kills the Burgermeister.
Husman.
Right. Yeah. No. Because the grandson goes, my grandfather was killed.
Right. That's right.
And he's not married to his sister. It's not that kind of movie.
Yeah. This one here. This is one of the parts of the movie when Husman's curiosity gets him to ID Lampini as Niemann.
Yep.
Dracula comes to his door of his office, and the shadow on the door doesn't match where. Carradine is standing.
Right.
He's standing facing the door, but you get almost like a side view of the shadow. But it's effective enough, but it, again, for folks like myself that are into continuity, you would not have had a shadow like that. But,
right.
But he gets him.
Well, so he now is going to escape. So he steals the wife, the girl, and he's in the stagecoach. So the husband's chasing after him. He's running, and then the cops get there on the horseback, and he takes one of the horses from the cops. And that cop stands there and goes, "I'm waiting." We're like, "Eh." You know, he just kind of stands there, like, "I guess I'm not going." The best is, though, is that Neiman and Daniel are escaping. And Daniel says, "Police master, you know, they're chasing him." And he's like, "They're chasing Dracula. I know how to get rid of him." And he throws the coffin out the back. It is outstanding. He just chucks the coffin. And what happens? Dracula flips the coach right over. Right? Just, right. But the problem is, the mustache is only half the mustache. Half it's missing. Right? He rolls the coach. The girl's in the coach. Now, if it's not like she's secured in there. He just chucks her in. She should be dead.
Right. Or,
but she not. She walks away. So, but he's trying to get in the coffin. And that's probably the most effective scene in the movie that Carradine's in. Because, again, I'm not a huge fan of Carradine or Dracula. When he's clutching at there, but he never opens it. Like, the coffin, it's like, I thought it would be even better if the coffin was upside down and he had to, like, roll it or something. Because he's dying in the sunlight. And then he turns back into the skeleton, right?
Yeah. John Fulton was credited with the special photographic effects, but there was no mention of Jack Pierce for makeup. Now, the thing with Fulton was that when Dracula kills Usman, he turns into a bat.
Yep.
And that's an effective scene because, it's a cartoon. He spreads his cape, and it just he transforms up into a bat. When Dracula is... When the coach turns over and Carradine goes up to the coffin, that's an effective scene because it's not shot in close up. It's shot in a long view, and you see the sun start to rise, and he then clutches his throat and his face, and he just dies.
Well, no, his hand. On there. That's close up of his hand.
Hand, yeah, and that's the only close up you see, and then the hand dissolves.
Well, the only issue I have with that is he's wearing gloves and clothes.
Right.
He dissolves into a naked skeleton.
Yes.
The clothes just somehow are gone. I guess the clothes make the man, so to speak. You know, but it is what it is. But to me, I felt like this was the end of episode one. Like, this is a movie. I felt like this was a TV series. Like, here's the end of episode one. We killed Dracula. Done.
Well, but
because what happens? The ring falls off her hand. The husband and her, they're, you know, kind of thing. And that's it. Like, you're like, and they got away. Like, it's seriously, like tune in next week, folks, to see if Lampini can find the Frankenstein monster. It was weird because it was shot that way. Dracula is in this movie to seriously kill the Burgermeister. And that's it. He has nothing to do with Frankenstein or the werewolf, right? Or Wolfman. He has nothing to do with it. In House of Dracula, the next movie, he has much more to do in it. But this felt like it was tacked on the beginning to kind of pad out the movie to the 70 minutes. Or you're watching two episodes of a TV show they sewed together.
The thing is, but Lampini's Dracula, all he had in there was Dracula.
But what I'm saying is, this is what this feels like. It feels like maybe the original story that was there didn't have this in it, and that this was at. Now, I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling this was added because in the original story, it was supposed to include Karis the Mummy. It was supposed to include the Ape Girl. It was supposed to include the Invisible Man. It was supposed to be like a rogues gallery of everything. Now, this is another thing, too. Universal, years before Marvel or DC made this universe, right? Universal, not meaning to, made a universe where they all exist because they're like, we need to put these guys together. So they actually did that connected universe thing long before there was connected universe with Marvel or DC or whatever, right? So by doing that, there's got to be continuity. And I think that's one of the big problems here is that, like, yes, we can accept that Carradine is Dracula instead of Lugosi or whatever kind of thing, but the names of towns, like where things occur, change. Right, and we see that when the next stop they make on their trip, right? Because he's going to Neiman is from what's the name? It's the one with the V. It's
Visalia,
which is spelled differently in both movies, by the way. It's spelled differently in that. Visalia is where they go in Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. That's where they destroy the castle. The problem is they go to Frankenstein, which is now a no. But that's the problem. They're not next to each other. Okay, this is not Gotham and Smallville.
Like, no, the thing is, but well, there were 100 was it 107 kilometers?
That's a lot of distance, Dad. For the dip to be wrong, the thing is, they find the Frankenstein monster and the Wolfman buried in ice after they blew up the dam in Frankenstein. But in the other movie, it's not in Frankenstein; it's in Versailles. Right?
Yeah.
And then Newman's supposed to be from Versailles. Now, I mean, I understand whatever the case might be, like they're doing, and maybe they're not, people really weren't worried about this, because let's be honest, chances are you saw Frankenstein meets the Wolfman in the, like in the movie theater or whatever, and chances are you never saw it again until you still, and you saw House of Frankenstein, so you may not remember all that stuff. Like, it's only now that we have these things readily available that we can see them, these flaws. And it's what it is. I mean, they find them frozen in the ice. Now, that's what happens. They leave that village. So let's keep, we're kind of getting here. So Dracula's dead. It's the end of that. Now, they head to the village of Frankenstein to search for his records. They hear, that's where Daniel saves Ilanka, the gypsy girl. She's getting beaten by right. the guy, right? The best is, though, he's whipping her. And then Daniel gets there and chokes the living heck out of him and then is beating him. Now, somebody's taking those shots because he's... I mean, it's J. Carroll Nash is whooping on somebody. Now, again, I don't think he's trying to hurt somebody on purpose, but he's laying him in. And they're like, get him out of here before he kills him. Before he kills him, dear Lord, that guy should have been split open like a melon.
Yeah, you know, I've always had a question. In all the movies, with the probably the exception of Dracula, but when you look at Frankenstein, the Bride of Frankenstein, right. Son of Frankenstein, why are there always gypsies dancing?
I don't know. Well, she was dancing for money.
Or there's a street fair going on. Even in The Wolfman, there's a street fair going on.
Well, in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, they're wearing snazzy outfits, but that's to move the plot along. I think over there, it just was a time when they were like, look, everyone's dying from whatever crazy diseases there are. Let's just dance, you know, kind of thing. I feel like it's Footloose with Kevin Bacon. Anyway, so they find him. Now, this is great. They go down there and they build a fire. Now, it's an ice cave. They are building the fire. Those are beams that hold up a house. I mean, those are not like...
Well, again, they could have fallen from the...
No, but I'm saying it. But they didn't go get small wood to start the fire. They're starting the fire with giant logs. And they have got a roaring fire going. And the best is how they're frozen. Right? Now, again, we're willing to accept that now it's Glenn Strange playing the monster instead of Lugosi. So we actually have someone who's good at playing the monster instead of Lugosi, who was atrocious at playing the monster. But my favorite is the way Lon Chaney is the Wolfman. Like, he's like, he looks like Elvis, kind of like, you know, doing the pose, and he's frozen, and then he turns in not the greatest dissolve. It was not a good dissolve. And it's melting, and he's the Wolfman, and then all of a sudden, he's Lawrence Talbot, you know, kind of thing. Like, there wasn't the normal dissolve they did.
Right, and his clothes are dry.
Yes. Oh, yeah, he's bone dry. Thank God, because I got out of that. Well, it's a pretty big fire. And then they warm up, the thing is they defrost the monster. Now, Glenn Strange, he made $500. He made a lot less money than him. Glenn Strange laid down most of this movie in his makeup. Now, I don't think... I mean, at the end of the movie, he has to do his part, and it's an important part. But what happens is he's laying there, and they're trying to... What do you call it? They're trying to warm him up. And that's always one of the funny scenes when they're warming him up. Go get more hot water! And they're just putting bandages on him. And he, Boris Karloff presses his wrist constantly. Press. You know, he's pressing on him. He's like, it's like he's feeling a steak. Like, you're cooking it, and you're like, you know, you kind of get the thumb test, like what it feels like. He's like, is he done yet? I think he's still frosty. So they're going. So what happens is Daniel's supposed to drive the coach, right? And Ilanka and him, and she's supposed to talk with him, and he's in love with her, right? Yeah. So what happens is now Talbot drives the coach, and this is the best because Newman says, Daniel's, can I drive the coach? And he goes, no, I'm tired of his constant, like, he's just complaining all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, I can't stand this guy's whining. Because all Talbot ever said, and it's true, and I think this is one of the things that we spoke about before, is his desire to die is so palpable. You have no doubt. He doesn't have to say to you, I want to die. You know he wants to die. The entire, from the Wolfman, the second half of the Wolfman through any movie he's in, he just wants to die. I mean, they kind of downplay that in Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein, but he just wants to die because he wants to be at peace. And I think Lon Chaney Jr., and I don't think he gets enough credit for this, he's able to portray that desire to just, like, that absolute despair and just you know, the pathos that he projects. No one projects that better. I've never seen a werewolf in any other movie where he's like, you know, kill me, I want to die. The werewolf in the end of Monster Squad, he wants to die the whole movie, but I think they're just channeling Fred Decker, just channeling Lon Chaney. Yeah. There.
Well, Lon Chaney was, believe it or not, was a decent actor. I mean, he was Lenny in A Mice and Men.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he's able to do that, but I think people don't give him credit for that.
Oh, no.
Because Lon Chaney has always been, Lon Chaney Sr.'s son. And Universal treated him like crap. And they did. They always said, like, well, you're lucky to have a job. And you're lucky to... And he always was trying to prove how tough he was. He was playing Kaharis, and he punched through a plate glass window. I can punch that window. And he was an alcoholic. And sorry to say that, but he was. And he was always trying to get out of his father's shadow. And I think that's part of the problem, is he wanted to make his characters... Because the one thing Lon Chaney Sr. Never had was a talking movie. Like, he didn't make his characters...
He did.
Not the Punchback, and not as Eric, you know, in the Family Opera. He had to portray his stuff with his face, and he emoted. Lon Chaney Jr. is, as a suit actor, as Luke would say, like a guy in a suit, he's fantastic at doing that stuff. As Kaharis, he's covered up as the Frankenstein monster in Ghost. He's covered up. And I mean, in Son of Dracula, he's got his face out there. And as a Wolfman, he's covered up. He's able to emote so much emotion. And he's such a good suit actor, quote unquote, you know, air quotes to the mic. I think people just miss that. I think he's kind of, because he's always remembered as being Lon Chaney Sr.'s son. He's remembered as being, you know, guy in a movie. But no one thinks of him as a suit actor. If he was a suit actor, kind of thing, like, you know, in Japan, he'd be much more celebrated as a suit actor.
Yeah, he was just never given the recognition that what he probably could have attained.
Yeah.
And then once he got typecast as the Wolfman.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that he ever did after that was pretty much based on that the character.
And it's a shame, because you see it here as he's playing, like, he's playing Talbot. Him as the Wolfman here is minimal. Him as the Wolfman and Frankenstein as the Wolfman. There's a lot of Wolfman stuff in that, which is why I like that movie so much. So much Wolfman-y stuff, right? The problem is here is he's not the Wolfman very much. He's Talbot for most of the time, and he's kind of just moping around and being whatever. But it's not moping around like he doesn't know. Like, I don't want to do this. He's like, operate on me. I want to die. I just want to be free of this curse. So they're on their way to Viseria, right? Where they're going to supposedly cure. He's promised Daniel he'll fix his body, because Daniel is obviously a hunchback. I don't know if we've mentioned that, but he is. He's a hunchback. And J. Carroll Nash actually found an actual person who was a hunchback in real life, a derelict, and he paid. He paid for him, and whatever he was doing, he brought him in and studied the way he walked and the way he acted, because he wanted to make it look real.
Yeah, and J. Carroll Nash has probably the most the best part in the movie.
Yeah.
His pathos is palpable. I mean, he's the love interest in the beginning. His love interest with the gypsy girl Alanka, but she's repulsed by his hump. When she doesn't see the hump, she's attracted to him. As soon as she sees the hump, you know.
That plays on, what do you call it? That's just Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's just playing right on Victor Hugo's story, where Esmeralda doesn't... I mean, she's repulsed by Quasimodo at first, but then she takes pity on him.
Yeah, but Alanka doesn't take pity.
Well, she doesn't have a chance because she gets killed. But
no,
what I'm saying is, like, she falls back, but I'm saying, but isn't that the... But that's Universal taking some... Because remember, the Hunchback in... I mean, we're talking about, Igor, that was Lugosi, and then Fritz, which is Dwight Fry, right?
Yeah,
yeah. They don't have, and they're. I mean, they're in the movie. I mean, in Igor is just a despicable character, the entire thing, and Fritz's job is basically like, well, we're here, and you know, rates have gone up, kind of thing. So, but I think Universal was trying to play off of there was taking some of the stuff from The Hunchback of Notre Dame, like that idea of like, because she's. She says, well, I'll talk with you the whole time. And until Talbot shows up, she's ready to be kind of, not his lover, but to be with him and to be his friend.
Yeah, but as soon as Talbot does show up, to me, Alanka is a tart. I mean, what she wants to do then is, now she's got this handsome, big, strong guy, and she keeps playing up to him. And only after she realizes that he is the Wolfman, is there any sympathy for her or for that she has for somebody else? Right? In my opinion, she was always out for herself.
Well, but that's the whole point of her, though. Her character here is not to be like, you know, her character here is basically to do that. She has to be there because you have to have something that for Daniel and Talbot to have some. For Daniel to be angry with him because he outs him as the werewolf. We're getting off here. So they pick up Talbot. They got the monster. They're in the wagon, right? We're good. They also kidnap Herr Holman, which was by Frank Raker, and Herr Strauss, which is Michael Mark, because Neiman plans to use Ullman's brain in the monster and the monster's brain to Talbot and the Wolfman's brain to Strauss.
Right.
He's playing swap the brains. It's like, you know, the three card money. You know, you never find the lady. So Daniel begs for Talbot's body so he can have Ilanka. Because he knows Ilanka, I mean, whatever it might be, if he had Talbot's body. But Neiman keeps saying no. So what happens? What does Daniel do? He tries to tell Ilanka that he's the wolf man, you know, kind of thing. But that's the whole point. Like, it's all these. People, everyone in the movie is out for themselves. No one is there for the greater good of anything. And I think that's one of the things that the Universal movies at this time at least showed us. In Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, the doctor, he portrays that he's going to try to help people. What is happening? He gets there and like immediate, like, nope, I'm going to make Frankenstein's monster strong. Why? Like, you promised to kill Talbot. Nope, I'm going to drain your energy and make the Frankenstein's monster strong and I'll be the guy. Everyone's out for themselves,
yeah.
Right? Which, again, I guess it's good to learn that lesson early in life. But you know what I'm saying? But it's funny how it keeps coming up.
Yeah, one of the better scenes at that point in time when Daniel tells Ilanka that Talbot is the Wolfman.
Right.
She doesn't believe him.
Yeah.
So he draws a pentagram.
Yes.
It's a five-pointed star. And Ilanka says, and he says, what is that? And she says, it's a star. It's the pentagram. And then they get into the classic line here. Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a werewolf when the wolfbane blooms and the moon is full and bright. And the look on Ilanka's face at that point is sheer terror.
Yeah. Well, so she doesn't believe him. Daniel gets mad. He starts whipping the monster. That's it. I'm taking it out on the supposedly unconscious monster, but he's not. Because now... The little thing popped up like a turkey,
right.
And he's good to go. They thawed him out enough. The best is to keep pouring hot. Just keep pouring hot water on it. It's like keep hitting it. So, shockingly, full moon rises. Bam! He's the werewolf. No hair on his hands, though, mind you. In the last transformation, they forgot the little bit of hair on his hands. So, at the end, he's missing it. So, he changes to the werewolf. The next day, he confesses to Ilanka, right? She vows to release him that evening, right? Neiman finally gets down to what he's doing, right? He revives them. So that now they're back at Neiman's lab, which is in really good shape. Really good shape.
It was dusty.
Like, well, they go, we got to clean up. And what happens? Cleaning montage, right? And it's like, but they're just cleaning. Like, this guy got run out of town and put in jail for doing Colin Clive's Frankenstein did.
15 years ago.
It looks good for 15 years. Now, they also didn't burn the place to the ground.
Right, the electric works.
Right. Well, that's the thing is they like burning things to the ground, or let's flood it, or let's, you know, like the monster's up in that windmill. Quick, burn the windmill down. We don't need that windmill, really. It's helping you survive. Burn it to the ground. Anyway, so needless to say, they get down to what they're going to do. He revives the monster, but it's not soon enough because Talbot changes into the werewolf, of course, and attacks Ilanka, right, who shoots him, and they both die. Right, that's when he dies. He has that missing the hair in his hands. Right, Daniel attacks Neiman, and of course the monster then kills Daniel because you know you can't be attacking. And then what happens is the villagers see the flickering lights and they're like, "Quick, we know what to do!" And it's like they went to Torches R Us and they just pick them all up and they're up the hill and we're doing this. Like, you know, I feel like it's like the scene from PCU. We brought our own, you know, kind of thing. So they go up there and they attack the monster. Now, when he's dragging him out. There's actually two kits. There's the one kit of him, like, that I think that it's the model kit with him, the full size him holding it.
Right.
Not This Way Quicksand. And the one I have, which is the old kit, where they're like chest deep in this quicksand, right? When the villagers are like, quick, light the marshes on fire. He throws that torch. Man, it goes up fast. You're thinking like, they haven't had rain in a while. Because it goes up and it's like engulfed in flames. And I think that's one of the things Glenn Strange was able to bring to the monster. And that's really, well... we've talked about this. The Don Post mask of Frankenstein is Glenn Strange's Frankenstein. It's not Karloff. It's not anyone. It's Glenn Strange. And Glenn Strange, when you think of Frankenstein's monster, unless you're specifically thinking of a certain movie, if you were to say to somebody, describe Frankenstein's monster, they are describing Glenn Strange, because he is truly what Frankenstein's monster has become. If you ask somebody to describe the mummy, they are not describing Imhotep, they're describing Kaharis, because they say, oh, kind of slow, walking with bandages. That's not Imhotep. Imhotep's a skinny guy with the fez. And you know what I'm saying? That's what happens. And you kind of... Dracula is one of those things where Lugosi might be... You know, people might remember Lugosi as Dracula or the Wolfman. Creature Black Goon, there's only one. You know, kind of thing. But I'm saying is, what we're seeing is Glenn Strange as Frankenstein. Glenn Strange, any scene where there's fire and he's Frankenstein is super effective. I don't know why he's that much more effective than anybody else, but he's super effective in those scenes. In fact, the scene in Abbot Costello's Frankenstein is just terrifying. When he walks through the fire, and you're like... oh man, it didn't work, you know, kind of thing. So he's dragging him that way. And the best is Karloff just saying, not this way, quicksand, not quicksand. And he's just like, I don't care, dude, we are going this way. Fire bad, me go this way. And he drags him right in and they, boom, blah, 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 and they go down.
Yeah. You know, so, Glenn Strange, you know, before he was another one that acted in a ton of Western movies. But he's a big guy.
Yeah.
So he was always the one who was leaning forward when they would have a shot at the bar or they're getting on the horses, because he just towered over everybody. The one thing that we didn't mention was I mentioned it earlier on, is that there's no Jack Pierce credit here.
Right.
There are two transformation sequences for the Wolfman. The first one is done not by his face, but by his feet, as he's walking in the dirt.
Yes.
And but the second one is in the mirror, but it happens really quickly. And it's one. I don't know if it was done purposely like that, but if Jack Pierce was not there. But it just, even though it's, you know, it's Lon Chaney, they're not as effective as they were in all the other movies, including Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, well, the makeup in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein was definitely a different makeup than this, and the Wolfman makeup changed over the years. And this is one of the things, too. Remember, Pierce built the original makeups right on their face every day.
Right.
By the time we got here, we're starting to get, like, masks. Not saying full masks, but at least prosthetic headpieces. And that's, I think, why Glenn Strange's Frankenstein is so much what people think of, that squared-off head and stuff. But it's what it is. When Daniel is thrown through the window, now that's a lot like in Abbott and Costello when they chucked her out the window, right? The scream you hear, right? It's not his scream. It's Karloff as the monster's scream when they find Igor's body in Son of Frankenstein.
Ah.
Yeah. So they reused it. Well, Universal used to hire actresses and they redub all the screaming. Right, they just redub all the screaming, but Alanka's screaming they thought was good enough, they left it in. They used to redub all this stuff. And that's one of the reasons why Wilhelm screams exist and things like that, because they just didn't capture it. Again, this is shot in the 40s. It's not shot, you know, nowadays when everything's all high tech and whatever. So, but the Glenn Strange here is the fourth person to play the Frankenstein's monster. It is the one, obviously, people remember. I think what happens, because originally in... Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, Lon Chaney was supposed to play both roles, and they said there's no way we're going to get the shoot done if he's got to go and make up for one and make up for the other, because in Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, it's what do you call it? He's not on screen with him much. It's more of a werewolf movie. It's a Wolfman movie instead of being a Frankenstein movie. He's only on screen for a small bit, so they felt they could definitely get away with that. The issue becomes is that they eventually, you know, bring in Lugosi, and then Lugosi had speaking lines. Remember, that was the reason he turned down Frankenstein in the first place.
Right, he had no lines.
And of course, what happens in Bride of Frankenstein, there's lines. And, you know, again, I think things happen for a reason. Boris Karloff as Frankenstein was important because it led to a lot of other things, and I don't think Lugosi could have done it. I mean, Lugosi's just a short man. It would just look weird. It's bad enough that Talbot towers over him in the movie before this, you know? So, it is what it is. But I think Glenn Strange here as the fourth one. Now, the funny part is, and this is something, Chaney's the only one to play all four. He played Son of Dracula. He played the mummy. Now, it's not Imhotep, it's Kaharis, but he still played the mummy. He played Frankenstein's monster. And, of course, he's the Wolfman, right? And Lugosi played three, right? Now, they make a big deal over here because this is, Boris Karloff is not playing a monster. But he is. He's the mad scientist. Now, the mad scientist part is not a quote-unquote universal monster, but here it is. It's actually his last movie he made for Universal in the horror series. Because after this, now he goes on to make other movies, but he doesn't make movies with Universal at this point. But see what it is. All right. So if you're interested in purchasing House of Frankenstein, you have several options. Now, of course, Two True Freaks website, Amazon link, click on it. That's how we keep the lights on. The one you have, actually, the DVD, it's Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and the House of Frankenstein, just on, is it one disc?
No, it's, yes.
It's one disc, one right? Disc. Yeah, but it's both movies together. $7.50 on Amazon. The Frankenstein Complete Legacy Collection, which is what we bought Haley last year. It's because Haley is the biggest Frankenstein. She's all about Frankenstein. You have, what do you want to be? Frankenstein? Can I be Frankenstein? She has a giant, she has, it's actually Karloff. It's not, it's the Karloff, it's got to be, what, 5 feet tall, that giant head she has in her room. Her back wall, where other girls might have, like, princess. Now, she has princesses on the wall, too.
Well, My Little Pony.
Well, yeah, My Little Pony, whatever. She has a Frankenstein head. So, that is my daughter. We bought her that. The Frankenstein Complete Legacy Collection. That's, you know, Frankenstein Bride, Son, Ghost, and it's Wolfman, House of Dracula, Abbott's House, so many Frankenstein. It's all of them, right? All together. 1945 on DVD. Now, the Blu-ray has been fluctuating in price. Currently, it's up around $30, and it's all those same movies. At some point, it dropped down to about $20, and it'll go back and forth. Again, if you don't own them, you know, you can actually pick up the 9 discs. How many discs was in that set that we got? The one,
yeah,
because you have 9 discs in your set, right? It's the Universal Monster set. That's the one, but you get the international release, the region free one. It actually includes the Creature Black Lagoon.
Right.
The U.S. release did include the Creature Black Lagoon. We don't know why, but it didn't. That would be a great, that, and then the rest of that set would fill it in.
Yeah, and the thing with the DVDs, I mean, obviously, if you're a Blu-ray fanatic, Blu-rays are better than DVDs. But these are all black and white films, and the DVDs are crisp.
Yeah.
I mean, in order to be prepared for this show, I watched it on a DVD, and if you have a good TV that's like my Samsung, it comes in. You know, your eyes can't see any better.
Right. Eventually, your eyes just aren't. So it's also available in the Dracula Complete Legacy Collection. It's actually available in the Wolfman Complete Legacy Collection, the Blu-rays. That's also coming out about the same amount of money. The funny part is, and Luke talks about this, the box art on the old VHS tapes, the old tapes you had that he now has.
Yes.
Right? The box art was those paintings they did. Now, those were released, the VHS tapes, and that was, I want to say, in the 90s sometime kind of thing, like when VHS was still a viable, you know, people still bought tapes. Those painted box arts on all those universes were just phenomenal. And this is one of those, it shows Frankenstein on this one, and the House of Dracula shows Carradine as Dracula. But it just showcased what it was. And those, you know, it's nice to see, love for some of those old movies, because a lot of people think, you know, oh yeah, well, I know, I've seen Dracula, I've seen the Wolfman. Like, some people have never seen these. And I'm going to be honest, I don't think I saw this. It's got to be at least 15, 20 years probably since I've watched House of Frankenstein, because it just never was my favorite. I always like Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman better because I'm a Wolfman fan, and that's a Wolfman movie. This is not a Wolfman movie. It's a good movie. It's definitely better than House of Dracula. But the problem is, I think what happened with Universal was they made Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, they made House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula. Then they made the best one, which is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But that was a whole different level, because Abbott and Costello was still hugely popular.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, and you know, that was a couple years later. That was what, 49?
That was 49.
49. So, you know, House of Dracula comes in between there, and then it had a few years. But they got Lugosi back to be Dracula. Glenn Strange is Frankenstein. They didn't just get any. And then the funny part again at the end being Vincent Price is the Invisible Man, throwing it in where it should have been in here. They knew what they were doing, and they were definitely playing to that. And the Abbott Costello movie, that was guaranteed drawing a crowd. You put the Universal Monsters in, you had all those people like, oh, I love the Universal Monsters. It's, you know, two great tastes that taste great together, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, and then the thing with Abbott and Costello was that Universal thought they had a moneymaker here. After this movie, Abbott and Costello meets the Mummy, Abbott and Costello meets the monster, which is Boris Karloff, Abbott and Costello.
The killer.
The killer.
Well, yeah. They did have Jekyll, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Emma Hyde, that's pretty good too. Yeah. And actually, and that's Karloff as Jekyll and Hyde. But again, that was the last one. Karloff made those, but he didn't make any more of the Universal monsters. No, pretty much no. It was done after this. But those are another movies for another time, and those are all well worth watching because they're really good. And that's one of the things, folks, is we've been going back and forth. I hit Piranha from the 70s. We talked about Night of the Creeps. We talked about, this is 45. Most of the movies seem to live in 1957, we talk about, but we'll get out of 57 eventually. And part of what we're saying is it's kind of all over the map. We need feedback from you. If you like this, great. If you didn't like it, great. Let's hear it. BotsBugsBabesPodcast@gmail.com. It's all in the outro of the show. Send us feedback if you got suggestions. You'd agree with us, don't agree with us. You have some cool story about whatever you want to share. We'd like to hear it. And feedback's good. It helps us, grow the show. So any last thoughts on this?
Well, yes. If you're going to watch these movies, and starting with Dracula in 31 all the way up to Abbott and Costello Meet Dracula.
Frankenstein. Yeah.
Try not to watch them on commercial TV.
God, no. Yeah.
Because when you have a commercial in one of these movies, it just loses all continuity.
Yeah. And 70-minute movie doesn't need six commercial breaks.
Yeah, or at least, we're in a two-hour time slot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
The last thing you need is Frankenstein's about ready to do anything.
And then, nope.
And you go to a Geico commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, so please, if you see these things, the DVDs, and you want to purchase it, by all means do so and watch the movie. But if you can stay off of commercial TV, I heartily recommend it.
Yeah. And the thing is, again, it's Halloween time here. So, right, this is dropping right on Halloween. This is AMC, not AMC.
Yeah, AMC.
No, TCM.
TCM.
TCM shows these, so hopefully you caught them. If you didn't get a chance to catch them, they're available. You're going to start seeing things. The problem is that TCM used to show all of them.
Well, they still might not, too.
But I don't know, but I'm saying they don't always show all of them anymore.
Well, yeah,
they don't have rights
order.
To order. Yeah, they don't show them in order and whatever. But it's one of those things that if you were able to look for them, you'll see them. They're there, and it's worth the time. And one of the things is this: if you have a youngster, my daughter's, she's five, going to be six, but she's kind of a different breed of child than most people's. This is a way to maybe introduce them to monsters that's not. Frankenstein and Dracula were terrifying for their day. People had heart attacks watching Frankenstein. Frankenstein scared people to death, but that's 1933, 32, whatever the heck it was, right?
Yep.
The whole point is this. These are a way maybe to introduce your child to the Universal monsters. Kind of, they maybe have an idea. It's not super scary. It's black and white, so it's a little. There's no blood. There's no gore. Maybe it can help them kind of get past some of those fears. Maybe they're a little afraid of the dark or whatever, and maybe it's a way to do it. Maybe it's not. But I'll be honest with you, is the you're not. There's nothing in here that would be, except her getting beat, but that's part of what's going on. There's nothing here you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they're showing this. There's no nudity, there's no sex, there's no anything. There's no bad language, kind of thing. The wolf man turns to a wolf man. He doesn't rip all his clothes off and get naked. It's not American Werewolf in London where he's, stealing the kid's balloons. The man stole my balloons. So, it's what it is, and they're great, great films, and hopefully you get a chance to check them out. Now, I did say we were leaving 1957, but, and there's always a but, we are coming up, we're going to be Thanksgiving time for the next one, and I thought, we need a big turkey. What big turkey can you think of? The Giant Claw. 1957 is The Giant Claw. Yes, we're going to cover it. I know we've talked about it before, and we're going to wind up probably talking to Harryhausen and stuff in there, it happens, but the November release will be The Giant Claw 1957, with its little, peanut hair on top, and it's, the flying battleship. So, keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the skies.
Happy Halloween!
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?